Welcome to today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Jim Mitchell, your volunteer broadcaster here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. These are the Journal's business and finance headlines for Friday, December 12, 2025. Disney is making a $1 billion investment in OpenAI and will allow the platform to use its characters and properties to generate short, user-prompted social videos. OpenAI is being sued for wrongful death by the estate of a woman killed by her son, who had been engaging in delusion-filled conversations with ChatGPT. Treasury yields slipped for a second straight session after the Fed's rate cut Wednesday, and the S&P 500 and Dow hit records, rising 0.2% and 1.3% respectively. The NASDAQ fell 0.3%. Oracle helped to drag the tech-laden index to the red, falling 11% in a stark display of investors' concerns about tech companies overspending on artificial intelligence infrastructure. A rebalanced gold trade was largely responsible for narrowing the U.S. trade deficit to its lowest level in 5 years in September. Broadcom reported rapid quarterly revenue growth as demand continued to rise for chips to equip the data centers that power AI models. Alvin McDonald will step down as chief executive of Lululemon, which has been under pressure from its founder to reverse a loss of cool. And Do Kwon was sentenced to 15 years in prison after pleading guilty to fraud in connection with the $40 billion crash of his Terra USD and Luna coins in 2022. So first, let's take a look at the markets with this article. Hope for rate cuts tempts investors to bonds by Sam Goldfarb. Investors are warming to bonds again, underscoring new hopes for further interest rate cuts have boosted Wall Street's outlook. Signs this week that the Federal Reserve remains open to reducing rates in 2026 have been welcomed by investors who had been prepared for the central bank to deliver a hawkish cut, lowering its benchmark federal fund rate, but signaling strong reluctance to make further adjustments. Stocks have rallied alongside bonds, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average on Thursday climbing almost 650 points, or 1.3%, to a record. Despite mixed messages on Wednesday from a divided Fed panel, many saw indications that even modest further weakening in the labor market could spur the central bank to cut again within the next few months. Investors were also cheered by the Fed's announcement that it would expand its balance sheet by buying short-term treasuries, a move intended to relieve recent pressure in overnight key lending markets. "We went into this meeting looking for a hawkish cut," said Priya Misra, a fixed income portfolio manager at J.P. Morgan. "It was not as hawkish as I think the market feared, so there was a sigh of relief on that front." Yields on U.S. Treasuries, which fall when bond prices rise, slipped for the second straight session Thursday, eroding a two-week climb that had lifted them to their highest levels since September. Treasury yields are heavily influenced by investors' expectations for rates set by the Fed. They, in turn, set a floor on borrowing costs across the economy, from mortgages to interest payments on new corporate bonds. Their recent climb had raised concerns on Wall Street, especially because a portion of the increase seemed to be driven by factors outside of the Fed's control, such as rising bond yields in other countries, including Japan. The Fed's message on Wednesday was nuanced, and its decision to cut drew three dissents, two from officials who wanted rates left unchanged. Language in the central bank's initial policy statement signaled a higher bar to additional cuts, echoing a similar pivot after cutting rates 1 year ago. Early in his post-meeting press conference, Fed Chair Jerome Powell signaled that the central bank wouldn't be in a rush to cut rates. Interest rates, he said, are now around their neutral value, making the central bank well-positioned to see how the economy evolves from here. But as he answered questions, Powell struck many investors as sounding more concerned about the employment situation than inflation, at one point saying the jobs market faces significant downside risks. Interest rate futures showed Thursday afternoon that traders saw a nearly 50% chance that the Fed cuts rates again at or before its meeting in March, according to CME Group, up from 39% on Tuesday. The chances of at least three total cuts next year rose to around 40% from 30% Tuesday, helping push the yield on the 10-year Treasury note down to 4.14% from 4.185%. Blake Gwynn, head of U.S. rate strategy at RBC Capital Markets, said the shift largely reflected investors' understanding of what Powell's own reaction function would be to coming economic data, including next week's job numbers. However, he also noted that Powell's own views might start carrying less weight as he nears the end of his term of chairman in May. Investors anticipate a very different Fed next year after President Trump this week started his final round of interviews with candidates to be Powell's successor. If Trump succeeds in his effort to get the Fed to significantly cut rates, analysts warn that it could backfire by causing investors to lose faith in the central bank's commitment to stable prices. That could cause yields on long-term treasuries to rise as investors worry about higher inflation and the potential need for much higher rates down the road. More likely, investors say, divisions at the Fed will just make it harder to predict what it will do with rates at each meeting. That could lead to more volatility in the bond market and possibly keep yields a bit higher than they would have been otherwise, as investors demand compensation for that turbulence. Global factors could also keep upward pressure on yields. While yields on U.S. Treasuries have come down this year thanks to the Fed's pivot to rate cuts, yields have been climbing elsewhere, including in Germany and Japan, thanks to the prospect for increased government borrowing and, in Japan's case, interest rate increases. Rising yields on other major developed economies can sometimes spill into the U.S. market, drawing cash away from treasuries. If yields on Japanese government bonds continue to ratchet higher, that probably is not good for the longer end of any market, including the U.S. markets, said Rob Waldner, chief fixed income strategist and head of macro research at Invesco. Still, many investors see a path for the 10-year Treasury yield to fall below 4%, even absent a major deterioration in the U.S. economy. There's nothing magical about 4%. We could drift below 4, said J.P. Morgan's Misra. That was Hope for Rate Cuts Tempts Investors to Bonds. Next, let's take a look at a different aspect of the U.S. economy with this article, Rebalanced Gold Trade Narrows U.S. Deficit, by Chao Deng and Matt Grossman. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed to its lowest in 5 years in September, according to the Commerce Department, mostly because U.S. investors moved gold back overseas after a huge run-up in imports of the precious metal. Early in the year, dealers had rushed to fly gold bars from Europe to New York amid speculation that President Trump's tariff threats on Europe would apply to gold. The confusion continued throughout the year and into the summer when U.S. Customs and Border Protection said that Trump's tariffs on Swiss imports would apply to the widely used 100-ounce and 1-kilogram gold bars from there. A few days later, however, on August 11th, Trump wrote on Truth Social that gold wouldn't be tariffed. Grace Zwemer, an economist at Oxford Economics, said that in August, once it became clear gold would not be impacted by tariffs, the rise in gold imports reversed course. She also attributed volatility in the gold trade this year to safe haven seeking, including in the lead up to a U.S. government shutdown that started October 1st. A surge of $6.1 billion in gold shipments back abroad in September made up most of the $8.4 billion increase in total exports. By comparison, gold imports rose by $1.9 billion. Stronger exports of consumer goods, including pharmaceuticals, also helped increase the sum of America's sales to foreigners. U.S. exports rose to $2.89.3 billion in September, while imports increased modestly to $342.1 billion. That yielded a trade deficit of $52.8 billion versus $59.3 billion in August. It was the lowest deficit since June 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted global supply chains and made it difficult for the U.S. to ship in goods from abroad. Trump has framed the U.S. trade deficit as inherently harmful and cast his tariff program as the fix. Many economists say, however, that his premise is off. While tariffs can nudge imports and exports in the short term, economists say a nation's trading balance is ultimately driven by its savings and investment patterns. Surging gold shipments are one example of how Trump's tariffs continue to scramble U.S. trade this year. The country's goods deficit has swelled in March as firms rushed to stock up before Liberation Day duties hit. It then plummeted in April after the 10% global tariff took effect. On the import side in September, computer and accessories fell by $2.7 billion, suggesting that the artificial intelligence build-out wasn't quite as strong as some economists predicted, said Paul Ashworth, economist at Capital Economics. Goods imports would have hit a 2.5-year low had it not been for a $12.9 billion resurgence in pharmaceutical imports sparked by Trump's threats to impose tariffs on branded drug imports, he said. The year-to-date trade deficit is 17% larger than in the first 9 months of 2024, partly reflecting a flood of imports at the start of the year as U.S. companies stocked up before tariffs landed. That was Rebalanced Gold Trade Narrows U.S. Deficit. Next, Disney set to invest $1 billion in OpenAI by Ben Fritz and Joseph Diavola. Disney's making a $1 billion investment in OpenAI and will allow the AI platform to use its characters and properties to generate short, user-prompted social videos. Disney's 3-year licensing deal will let users generate videos using Sora, OpenAI's short-form AI video platform, of more than 200 Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, and Pixar characters. A curated selection of these short videos will be available to stream on Disney+. Until a few years ago, generative AI was hardly a concern for Hollywood compared with falling box office receipts for movies and cord-cutting for TV. But with the 2023 Hollywood strikes and the introduction of Sora the following year, AI took center stage to text-to-image and video apps mined copyrighted film, television, and comic book characters to train their large language models. Entertainment companies like Disney faced a dilemma: sue the AI companies or try to make deals with them. Disney and OpenAI announced their deal a day after Disney sent a cease and desist letter to Google, accusing the tech giant of infringing Disney's copyrights on a massive scale, demonstrating the carrot-and-stick approach is still taking to artificial intelligence. Alphabet's Google is the biggest tech company to incur Disney's wrath for allegedly using copyrighted material to train its AI systems and allowing its tools to output materials that violate copyrights. The Disney letter includes dozens of images and screenshots of videos created with Google's Gemini, Nano Banana, and Veo apps featuring Disney-owned characters like Darth Vader, Homer Simpson, and Spider-Man. A Google spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment. OpenAI will compensate Disney to use its characters in Sora, a person with knowledge of the matter said. In addition to its $1 billion investment, Disney's getting warrants to buy more stock in OpenAI at its current $500 billion valuation. The characters that Sora users will be able to access include Mickey Mouse, Elsa, and Black Panther. None include the likenesses or voices of actors, allowing the companies to avoid complicated rights and compensation issues. The agreement includes provisions limiting what the Disney characters can do in Sora-created videos related to drugs and alcohol, sex, and interaction with other companies' properties, the knowledgeable person said. Still, given the unpredictable nature of AI outputs, there are likely to be numerous instances of videos that violate Disney standards or embarrass the company, particularly at first. The deal signals that Disney trusts OpenAI to work with it to address such problems. The partnership is the result of nearly 2 years of talks between the two companies, the knowledgeable person said. The talks accelerated this summer after OpenAI showed Disney Sora 2 and its accompanying short-form video app before they launched in September. The talks included dozens of meetings, including with Disney's chief executive Bob Iger and OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, the knowledgeable person said. In this deal, OpenAI is both respecting and valuing our creativity, Iger said on Thursday on CNBC, adding that Disney had been in conversation with Google over respecting copyrights that didn't bear fruit. We felt we had no choice but to send them a cease and desist. The availability to engage with characters in a 30-second video is of particular interest to Disney because AI can help the company win and retain younger audiences, Iger said. He expects Sora-generated content to be spotlighted on Disney+, which should boost young users on that platform. Altman, also speaking on CNBC, acknowledged concerns about how Disney's princess's image might be used in AI-generated content and said guardrails for young users will be key. He called Disney an open-minded partner on how the technology will evolve. The deal will allow Disney to deploy ChatGPT to employees and use OpenAI tools to create new products and services. The partnership is exclusive for 1 year, after which Disney can make similar arrangements with other AI companies. News Corp, owner of the Wall Street Journal, has a content licensing partnership with OpenAI. OpenAI has been on high alert from the rising threat of Google after it released a new version of its Gemini AI model in November that surpassed OpenAI's models on industry benchmark tests. Altman declared a code red effort to improve the quality of ChatGPT to delay other products. On Thursday afternoon, OpenAI released its GPT 5.2 model, which is said surpassed Google's latest model on key benchmarks. The update speeds up the professional knowledge work for dozens of tasks, including perceiving images, creating spreadsheets, writing code, and handling complex multi-step projects, the company said. Now, that was Disney set to invest $1 billion in OpenAI. Sticking with AI, we have this article. Oracle renews worries on AI spending by Heather Gillers and Peter Ruger. Oracle shares fell sharply on Thursday, a stark display of investors' concerns about tech companies overspending on artificial intelligence infrastructure. The stock closed at $198.85, down 11%. Its worst day since the January tech rout, spurred by the success of DeepSeek, a Chinese artificial intelligence startup. Oracle was the worst performer in the S&P 500 and helped drag the NASDAQ composite into the red, even as the Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P climbed to records. Oracle snapped a 7-day streak of gains and raised new worries about the AI trade that has boosted markets to records this year. The company emerged as an AI darling earlier this year, in September posting a 1-day gain topping 30% after signing up OpenAI and others to big contracts for its advanced cloud computing services. But that business model required Oracle to spend tens of billions of dollars on NVIDIA chips and networking equipment for data centers it leases. Those outlays come well before it books the revenue from those long-term contracts, and before it could demonstrate that renting access to AI computing was a durable or profitable business. It's like the poster child of the AI bear case, said Jay Hatfield, chief executive of Infrastructure and Capital Advisors. Much of Oracle's stock slide happened just after the company announced increased spending plans on artificial intelligence infrastructure on an earnings call Thursday, Hatfield said. They essentially validated the ongoing fears about excessive capital expenditures, he said. Even with Thursday's sell-off, Oracle shares are up 19% this year. Oracle's $12 billion in capital expenditures last quarter exceeded analysts' expectations and the amount of cash it generated from its operations. It raised its full-year outlook for capital spending to around $50 billion. How Oracle plans to finance those commitments is a question. Analysts expect the company will need to issue tens of billions of dollars of additional debt, plus tens of billions more it will owe on leases. Chief executive Clay Magorek told analysts it was hard to say how much money Oracle needs to raise because its customers could supply their own chips to data centers Oracle leased, and because Oracle could decide to rent computing capacity from vendors rather than buying it. He pushed back on estimates that it will need upward of $100 billion to complete its data center deals, but said only it would need less, if not substantially less than that. Oracle chairman Larry Ellison, whose roughly 40% stake in the company has made him one of the world's richest people, now faces a one-day paper loss of about $34 billion. The ally of President Trump is helping his son, David Ellison, chief executive of Paramount, pursue a hostile bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. I think you have a little healthy skepticism, said Richard Steinberg, senior global market strategist at Focused Partners Wealth. Maybe the other 493 stocks can catch up and we can take a break with NVIDIA and some of the more shiny objects. That was Oracle renews worries on AI spending. Staying with that AI theme, we turn to this article. President signs order to curtail state laws on AI by Alyssa Lukpat and Natalie Andrews. President Trump signed an executive order Thursday that aims to override state laws on artificial intelligence. The order would allow the Justice Department to punish states with rules deemed restrictive for AI in a move to bring the U.S. under one federal standard. Silicon Valley executives had been lobbying the president to ban state AI laws that they said could cause the U.S. to lose the AI race to China. We have to be unified, Trump said in the Oval Office, citing that China didn't have to contend with state legislatures. China has one vote because they have one vote, and that's President Xi. He said, do it, and that's the end of that, said the Trump, who also signed an executive order targeting proxy advisors to shareholders. The White House planned to examine certain state laws through a legal task force convened by the Justice Department that could withhold federal funding. The approach could put the administration in conflict with Republican states that have sought to pass laws protecting children or regulating data centers in their state. There have been over 1,000 AI bills proposed at the state level. Utah Governor Spencer Cox, a Republican, pitched an additional executive order that would safeguard children. States must help protect children and families while America accelerates its leadership in AI, he said in a post on X on Thursday, ahead of Trump's order. Congressional Republicans sought to pass a moratorium on state laws in both the tax bill that passed in July and in this year's defense bill. Both of those efforts failed. Democrats criticized the AI order. President Trump's AI order is an attempt to kill responsible safety reforms passed by states, which would create a lawless Wild West environment for AI companies, said Representative Don Beyer, Democrat of Virginia, co-chair of the Congressional AI Caucus. After months of failed lobbying and two defeats in Congress, big tech has finally received the return on its ample investment in Donald Trump, said Senator Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts. Trump is delivering exactly what his billionaire benefactors demanded, all at the expense of our kids, our communities, our workers, and our planet. I will use every tool available to challenge this indefensible and irresponsible power grab. Trump is testing the loyalty of MAGA conservatives, including his former strategist Steve Bannon and Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri. They opposed banning state laws in Congress, saying the move would undermine states' ability to regulate potential harms from AI. White House AI czar David Sacks said Thursday the government planned to keep laws protecting children's safety, but target certain state regulations deemed onerous. Trump said people or companies working on AI shouldn't have roadblocks to set up a business in the U.S. If they had to get 50 different approvals from 50 different states, you can forget it, because it's not possible to do, he said. That was President Signs Order to Curtail State Laws on AI. Next, U.S. Flies Bombers to Support Tokyo by Jason Douglas. Two U.S. B-52 bombers flew in formation with Japanese fighters over the Sea of Japan, a conspicuous display of U.S. support for Tokyo as it battles Chinese anger over remarks Prime Minister Sanae Takayuki made about Taiwan. The exercise came a day after Russian and Chinese warplanes conducted a joint patrol in the seas around Japan's southern islands. This bilateral exercise reaffirms the strong will between Japan and the U.S. not to tolerate unilateral changes to the status quo by force, said Japan's Ministry of Defense. The presence of U.S. strategic bombers alongside Japanese aircraft marks an uplift in U.S. support for Japan as tensions flare between Tokyo and Beijing. The B-52s were accompanied by three Japanese F-35s and three Japanese F-15s, the Defense Ministry said. Senior U.S. administration officials so far have kept silent on the quarrel, which erupted in November when Takayuki triggered Japanese fury by saying Japan could be pulled into conflict over Taiwan to defend itself or its allies such as the U.S. China considers the self-ruled island democracy part of its territory and hasn't ruled out taking it by force. That was U.S. bombers fly to support Tokyo. And Mexico ups tariffs on Chinese goods. Jonathan Cheng and Santiago Perez. Mexico's move to ratchet up tariffs on key Chinese imports earned it a stiff warning from Beijing as Mexican officials prepare for a complex review of a free trade deal with the U.S. and Canada. Mexico's Senate approved a bill Wednesday to raise tariffs as high as 50% on cars, steel, and other goods from China and other Asian countries with which it lacks a trade pact. Mexico has become a major destination for Chinese-made vehicles, which account for nearly one-third of the roughly 1.6 million units sold in Mexico this year. Measures are likely to affect companies such as BYD, which has expanded aggressively nationwide in the past 2 years by exporting its affordable EVs made in China. Automakers with manufacturing operations in Mexico, such as General Motors, Ford, Stellantis, and South Korea's Kia will still be allowed to import vehicles made in China tariff-free. That was Mexico ups tariffs on Chinese goods. You're listening to The Wall Street Journal on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, Jim Mitchell. If you miss any part of this program or any other of our great broadcasts, you can stream it on demand on our website, sunsounds.org, or from our new SunSounds mobile app, available for both Apple and Android phones. And now, let's go on to our next article. So entrepreneur Kwan sentenced to 15 years in prison after guilty plea by Vicky Jiwan and Alexander Osipovich. Disgraced crypto tycoon Do Kwan was sentenced to 15 years in prison on Thursday after pleading guilty to fraud in connection with the $40 billion crash of his Terra USD and Luna coins in 2022. Kwan, who had asked for a sentence of 5 years, pleaded guilty to two criminal counts in August, including one count of wire fraud and one on conspiracy to commit wire fraud, securities and commodities fraud. In exchange for Kwan's plea, federal prosecutors agreed not to seek a prison sentence of more than 12 years and dropped seven other counts against him. At the start of Thursday's hearing, Judge Paul A. Engelmeyer said he was concerned whether it was fair and appropriate to proceed with the sentencing given the late arrival of some 315 victim letters. Kwan said he hadn't had the chance to physically read the letters, though he and his lawyers decided to proceed with the sentencing. Kwan's sentencing is a curtain call for the entrepreneur who was among the loudest and most influential cheerleaders for digital currencies during the 21-22 crypto boom. Born in South Korea and educated at Stanford University, Kwan founded the crypto firm Terraform Labs in 2018. He promoted Terra USD, an algorithmic stablecoin, as the future of money, and was notorious for deriding his critics in social media posts, until the collapse of his coins triggered a daisy chain of crises that eventually ushered in what the industry calls its crypto winter. At its peak in the spring of 2022, the total market value of all cryptocurrencies associated with Terraform exceeded $50 billion, prosecutors have said. Their subsequent failures hurt hundreds of thousands of investors worldwide, some of whom lost their life savings nearly overnight when Terra USD lost its peg to the dollar. Kwan, who had been based in Singapore, vanished from public view several months later, just as South Korean authorities issued a warrant for his arrest. Officials eventually tracked him down in Serbia. He was arrested at an airport in neighboring Montenegro in March of 2023 while trying to board a private jet to Dubai using a fake Costa Rican passport. He fought against extradition in the U.S. until Montenegro transferred custody to U.S. authorities last year. In a letter to Engelmeyer to support his bid for a lighter sentence, Kwan expressed remorse for bashing critics who had warned about Terra USD's depegging risk. In my insane arrogance, all I felt then was annoyance at the naysayers who seemed only interested in slowing me down. I resorted to childish memes and made fun of my online opponents to silence them, he said. After the 2022 crash, Kwan said he was like a zombie and came close to suicide. He said his lawyers advised him to flee to Serbia, where he hoped to reestablish Terraform Labs. Prosecutors, in a letter seeking a tougher sentence, questioned the sincerity of Kwan's apologies and noted his history of scoffing at authorities. They cited his private remarks about the crash, including a call in which he told an associate that he could cut a deal with South Korean prosecutors to get 6 months in jail or tell them to F off. Kwan also said on the call that he had been looking into countries that can offer political protection and things like that. The letters shed light on an episode at the heart of Kwan's guilty plea. Terra USD's short depeg in May of 2021, in which the coin fell below a dollar but recovered after it was secretly popped up by Chicago-based Jumping Trade, then a big backer of Kwan. As part of his guilty plea, Kwan admitted he failed to disclose Jump's intervention. In a November 26 letter to the judge, Kwan said he had desired transparency, what was blocked from talking publicly about the rescue. Prosecutors countered that Kwan was trying to shift blame. That was crypto entrepreneur Kwan sentenced to 15 years in prison after guilty plea. Next, AI demand lifts Broadcom sales by Robbie Whalen. Broadcom on Thursday reported rapid revenue growth as demand continues to rise for chips to fill the data centers that power artificial intelligence models. The company, which specializes in designing custom AI accelerator chips for companies like Google, OpenAI, and Meta Platforms, as well as other networking, storage, and memory chips that are essential to advanced computing, posted a profit of $8.518 billion, or $1.74 a share, in the fiscal fourth quarter that ended in early November, compared with $4.3 billion, or 90 cents a share, a year earlier. Sales were $18.02 billion for the quarter and $63.9 billion for the full fiscal year, better than analyst estimates of $17.5 billion and $63.3 billion, respectively. In a statement accompanying the release, Broadcom Chief Executive Hock Tan attributed the revenue growth primarily to sales of AI chips. The company projected $8.2 billion in AI revenue for its first quarter, a considerable jump from the consensus forecast of $6.9 billion. The company's AI revenue has been steadily rising for the past year as demand for chips capable of handling advanced computing workloads has skyrocketed. Broadcom has largely shrugged off the correction that began in late October and erased hundreds of billions in market value from tech stocks amid worries that a bubble is building in AI. More optimistic analysts expect the company's book of business to grow. By the end of the decade, custom AI chips could represent between 25 and 30% of the whole accelerated computing market, according to Futurum Group, up from just a fraction today. Many top industry executives expect the entire AI chip market to grow to around $1 trillion a year in the next few years. Broadcom, which designs the custom chips made by Google, known as Tensor Processing Units, or TPUs, is positioned to control 70 to 80% of that custom chip market, said Daniel Newman, Futurum CEO. People used to talk about how software was going to eat the world, but now semiconductors are eating the world, and Broadcom has really just mastered the class of custom silicon for AI, Newman said. That was AI Demand Lifts Broadcom Sales. Next, let's turn from artificial intelligence to athletic wear with this article, Lululemon CEO to Exit Amid Struggles by Suzanne Kapner. Lululemon Athletica Chief Executive Calvin McDonald will step down in January, according to the athletic gear maker, which has been under pressure from its founder to make changes to reverse its loss of cool. McDonald will also relinquish his board seat, but remain a senior advisor through March, to facilitate a smooth transition, the company said. His exit comes as Lululemon's estranged founder, Chip Wilson, had privately been taking steps to run a proxy fight against the athletic apparel retailer, according to people familiar with the matter. Wilson had recently tapped advisors and had meeting with potential investors as he mulled the move, people said. Wilson has been frustrated with the company's marketing strategy, among other things, people said. It couldn't immediately be learned if McDonald's exit will impact Wilson's potential plans. Lululemon didn't respond to requests for comment. Shares rose 10% in aftermarket trading after the company announced the leadership change and quarterly results. Lululemon will conduct a search for McDonald's replacement. In the meantime, Megan Frank, finance chief, and Andre Mastrini, chief commercial officer, will serve as interim co-CEOs. Chairwoman Marty Morfitt will take on the expanded role of executive chairwoman. Lululemon was an upstart that revolutionized athletic apparel with its leggings that were so functional and flattering that women wore them not just to yoga class, but brunch, the supermarket, and just about anywhere else. McDonald, who had served as an executive at the beauty chain Sephora, took the helm of Vancouver-based Lululemon in 2018 and steered it through the pandemic, tripling its annual sales during his tenure to $10.6 billion. More recently, though, the company's U.S. sales have faltered, and it's come under attack by Wilson, who has blamed the loss of cool on the kind of CEO who can speak Wall Street but is killing innovation. On Thursday, Lululemon reported a 7% increase in net sales to $2.6 billion for the period that ended November 2nd. All that growth came from international markets, however. In the Americas, net revenue dropped 2%. To date this year, Lululemon shares have fallen more than 51%, erasing $25.4 billion in market capitalization, according to FactSet. McDonald's departure may not satisfy Wilson, who founded the company in 1998. He has mostly called for a board shakeup. He hopes for a reformed board that is infused with people who are entrepreneurial, creative, and have technical apparel experience, lead with innovation, and have a founder mentality, Wilson's spokesperson Andrea Mestrovic said to the Wall Street Journal last month. Under McDonald, Lululemon expanded stores, which now number more than 780 worldwide. The company also entered new international markets, built its men's business, and expanded further into new categories such as tennis and golf. Yet some recent decisions have raised eyebrows among analysts and customers, including deals to sell apparel emblazoned with Mickey Mouse or NFL logos. The company has said the partnerships represent a small part of its business and are a way to connect with younger shoppers. That was Lululemon CEO to exit amid struggles. Next, U.S. jobless claims rise by Matt Grossman. The number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits rose last week, but stayed well within the range that has prevailed over the past year. Last week, 236,000 initial jobless claims were filed, up from 192 the week before, the Labor Department said. For almost all of 2025, the Labor Department has recorded roughly between 210 and 250,000 new claims each week, and the latest figures suggest December didn't begin with any serious pickup in layoffs. Many economists suspect the low late November figure of 192,000 reflected an errant seasonal adjustment factor due to the timing of Thanksgiving. Continuing claims, which show the trend in total size of an unemployment population, fell in the week through November 29th to 1.84 million versus 1.94 million a week earlier. That was U.S. jobless claims rise. Next, Senate efforts to extend health care fall short by Lindsay Wise, Siobhan Hughes, and Anna Wild Matthews. A Democratic effort to extend expiring health care subsidies drew some Republican votes, but failed Thursday to advance in the Senate, and a GOP approach also failed, leaving no clear path in Congress for aiding millions of Americans facing soaring Affordable Care Act insurance costs next year. The Democratic proposal would have extended the enhanced COVID-era ACA subsidies for 3 years. The bill was backed by 51 senators, including Republicans, Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, and Josh Hawley of Missouri, with 48 opposed, short of the 60 votes needed to advance under the Senate's filibuster rule. Republicans who controlled the chamber, 53 to 47, put forward an alternative health care bill that wouldn't extend the subsidies, but instead offer federal funds to some householders to put toward out-of-pocket health care costs. The Republican proposal also failed, 51 in favor and 48 opposed. GOP Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky sided with Democrats in voting against the measure. Senator Steve Daines, Republican of Vermont, was absent for both votes. The lack of progress in Congress has left many of the nation's ACA enrollees in precarious situations. With open enrollment generally closing December 15th for plans starting January 1st, households are signing up now for coverage with sharply higher costs, with no guarantee that Congress will act to restore subsidies and bring down the price tag. Others are expected to skip coverage altogether. With the failure of the two votes Thursday, hope is fading for any deal to extend the subsidies before the end of the year, if at all. The next major legislative deadline is January 30th, when lawmakers need to pass a new bill funding the government. Still, some lawmakers believe a deal could still be reached. I hope there are enough people on both sides who want to come to the table and get a compromise, said Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire. Republicans argue that the ACA is a failed program that has done nothing to bring down mounting health care expenditures. But some Republicans have expressed openness to talks, concerned about high costs for their constituents, and worried their party will be blamed in next year's midterm elections if the GOP-led Congress doesn't act to save the subsidies. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, criticized the Republicans' bill as a continuation of the status quo and, quote, an attempt to disguise the real impact of Obamacare's spiraling health care costs. Soon said after the votes that some Republicans are interested in talking to Democrats, but we'll see if they have an audience, he said. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, responded that Republicans would have to get off their positions that they're not for extending the subsidies at all. Hawley said he voted to advance both the Democratic and Republican proposals to begin debate and move forward. I want to see big changes to both of them, but just my view is we got to do something. My state's hurting on this, said Alaska Sullivan, who's up for re-election next year. Some Democrats have said they're open to a compromise with the Republicans to extend the subsidies with changes such as an income cap. Currently, there's no formal income cap for eligibility for federal help. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said Thursday that the president is working with his health policy team as well as Republicans on Capitol Hill to find a solution. She said Schumer put the vote on the floor knowing that it will fail so he can have another talking point that he can throw around without any real plan or action. Thursday's vote on the Democratic bill was a concession secured by a band of centrist Senate Democrats in November when they agreed to side with Republicans to end the government shutdown. About 24 million people are enrolled in ACA plans, and most of them receive subsidies. The enhanced ACA subsidies were enacted in 2021 during the COVID pandemic and have attracted millions of consumers to ACA plans, many of them in states Trump won in 2024, but are set to expire at the end of this year. Unless Congress acts, some middle and upper income people will lose the benefit entirely. Other households will still receive an ACA subsidy, but the size will revert to pre-pandemic levels, increasing their health care costs. Trump has said he doesn't want to continue the subsidies, and he said he likes the idea of instead giving Americans money in tax-advantaged health savings account, a central piece of the legislation proposed by Senators Bill Cassidy of Louisiana and Mike Crapo of Idaho that failed on Thursday. The Cassidy-Crapo bill would put up to $1,500 a year into accounts for ACA enrollees earning less than 700% of the federal poverty level and enrolled in lower-priced copper or bronze insurance plans in 26 and 27. The funds could be used to cover out-of-pocket expenses, but not to pay for premiums or for abortion or gender transition services. Their proposal also would allocate federal funds to finance discounts that the ACA promises to many low- and middle-income consumers on their out-of-pocket charges. In the House, Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, said Republicans plan to put on the floor next week a package of health care proposals that doesn't include extending subsidies. Many lawmakers see an ACA subsidy extension as the only way to prevent widespread pain ahead of the 2026 midterms and get a GOP-led Congress in position to make more sweeping changes. That was Senate efforts to extend health care fall short. Next up, MyPillow founder runs for governor by Victoria Albert. Mike Lindell, the founder of MyPillow and a staunch supporter of President Trump, is running to be Minnesota's next governor. Lindell has faced legal and financial troubles for spreading false rumors that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Trump because of widespread fraud. No court or election authority has found widespread fraud in the 2020 election. In the Republican primary, he will be in a crowded field of candidates vying to challenge Democratic Governor Tim Walz, who's running to become the state's first three-term governor. That was MyPillow founder runs for governor. Next, let's turn to the opinions section of the journal and begin with this review and outlook article, The Real Reason Europe is Decaying. European leaders are furious at President Trump following his recent derogatory comments about their continent. This is becoming an instructive diplomatic fiasco, even if it's one in which Dr. Trump botches a diagnosis of the continent's most serious problems. The administration's national security strategy last week stirred outrage by warning that America's European allies faced civilizational erasure. Mr. Trump's foreign policy panjandrums mean primarily that mass immigration and deepening political illegitimacy are sapping Europeans' vim and vigor. Mr. Trump followed this week by describing Europe as weak and decaying. The strategy, a brainchild of Vice President J.D. Vance and his circle, implies the U.S. may withdraw from its longstanding security cooperation with Europe if Washington decides Europe is no longer worth defending. A particular threat concerns the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The strategy paper warns that mass, read Muslim, immigration means some NATO members could within a few decades be majority non-European. Mr. Trump and Vance have a point. The European Union does too many things, foreign policy, environmental regulations, and the like, badly that it shouldn't do at all. What it's supposed to do, such as creating a continent-wide free trade bloc, it does poorly. European voters are angry about their leader's failure to get a grip on migration crisis now, entering its second decade. They're frustrated with the increasing prosperity gap between Europe and the U.S., and with Europe's frailty in the face of foreign challenges, such as Russia's war on Ukraine. Worst of all, they see that their leader's first instincts are to suppress contrary opinions, which is why free speech is again a hot debate in Europe. Some of this bespeaks the lack of confidence in European civilization that the Trump administration observes. Much of this traces its loss of belief in the superiority of Western values, including guilt over imperialism and destructive 20th century wars. But the Trump diagnosis ignores the biggest threat to Europe's well-being. That is Europe's generous social welfare state and the cascading fiscal, economic, and social ills they create. Government social expenditures in the U.S. account for 19.8% of GDP in 2024, according to data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. In France, the figure was 30.6%, in Germany, 27.9%. And in Italy, 27.6%. This share will rise as populations age. These columns recently documented the severity of the old age entitlement problem in France and Germany especially. This fact explains much of what ails Europe. Large welfare states require large tax bills to fund them, which is why government revenues reached 47% of GDP in France, 41% in Germany, and 43% in Italy, but just 27% in the U.S. That level of taxation saps incentives for innovation and entrepreneurship. Generous welfare states also discourage work, which partly explains why Europe's labor markets are so sclerotic. Meanwhile, European governments, taxed to the hilt and increasingly indebted, find it difficult to spend more on defense. hence the continent's inability to shape events in Ukraine, embarrassing leaders and voters, and deepening the sense of ennui caused by economic underperformance. The question is why Mr. Trump advance stress migration and culture more than these fiscal and economic facts. Perhaps because Mr. Trump doesn't want to reform America's own entitlement state. Mr. Vance often speaks as if he wants to expand the government's role, as if welfare checks and bureaucracy can restore national elan and social unity. Reforming welfare is politically difficult. It's far easier to denounce migrants and European cultural decadence, especially when the U.S. is on similar, if slower, path to welfare sclerosis. Immigration is a manageable challenge. Now that Europe is starting to grapple with it, Washington could also be a positive influence on Europe, as Reagan's policy example was in 1980s. Mr. Trump's demand for more defense spending will require welfare reforms that would benefit everyone. But an irony of the Trump-Vance rhetoric is that it could make most of Europe's problems worse. The domestic political allies they want to cultivate in Europe, such as Germany's Alternative for Germany, AFD, or France's National Rally, are big state anti-economic reform parties and often are instinctively anti-American to boot. This isn't the way to make friends or spur a European revival. That was the real reason Europe is decaying. That brings us to the end of today's Wall Street Journal for Friday, December 12th, 2025. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster, Jim Mitchell. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more interesting programming right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona.